All right, let's get into it.
Welcome to What If? Creativity in a Nutshell, a podcast brought to you by Berg School of Communication.
This is exciting. I don't really actually know what we're going to talk about. Well, I kind of know what we're going to talk
about.
We
do. And it's also like, I think it's stuff we've spoken about either in class or to friends or to clients before. So it's like,
it's just, you want to sound smart when you do a podcast.
Yeah, but that's what editing's for.
True.
You're like, you just need to find a sound studio in Copenhagen.
Absolutely.
For your lines.
Yeah, exactly.
In the first episode, we're going to talk about the idea of the creative genius and why that's a myth that needs to go away for lots of reasons.
It needs to die.
It needs to die. It does. It really does. I think there's lots of reasons why it's holding us back and holding lots of people back from seeing themselves as creatives.
Mm. And also, what is a creative? In his own definition, a creative is someone who's a creative person. I think everyone is creative to a certain extent. It's just a matter of trying to foster that kind of mindset and to, you know, practice like everything else.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's something that as a school, as a school of communication, I think we're pretty uniquely positioned to look at creativity in the current world and kind of the future world in a unique place. So these are issues that we think about a lot internally and that we talk a lot about in kind of classes and programs and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to talking to you about it. But maybe we should introduce ourselves even a tiny little bit.
That sounds like a good idea.
So, I mean, my name's Adam Horn. I'm creative director at Berg Studio. I've got an Australian accent. So if you need to listen to this podcast at half speed to work it out, I think you'll be fine. I've worked in Australia and in Paris, and now I find myself in Stockholm at Berg School of Communication. And today I'm joined by...
me, Christopher Waldekrantz. Hi. So my name is Christopher and I am the marketing director here at Berg's. And I used to be a program director for the art director and copywriting program here. I also have a background in agency world. I actually worked in Australia, so I have a slight twang as well.
Yeah, he understands my accent better than most.
I now live in Copenhagen, where I also work in a design agency there that I run. So I'm a bit all over the place, and I've been with Berg's for 7 years. It's the longest time I've ever been at any place.
I mean, you're a fairly young man, so 7 years is a decent percentage of your life.
It is, and also I'm not that young, but thank you.
he looks young.
Yeah. I've been here for a long time, and I think it's because the dynamics of this place. It's constantly changing. It's within the sort of creative and strategic world, and it's always challenging and really fun.
One reason why I like picking your brain and hanging out with you is because you've seen Berg's from lots of perspectives. So you've studied here and now you're running marketing and consulting and in a leadership group. So you've seen all sides of the school.
I have. I started here in 2008. So that's 12 years ago. I was studying to become an art director, and it was my life dream to get into this school. And I applied, and I miraculously got in at the first try, which was amazing. Because I've tried some other schools, and I was hardly denied. And I was like denied full on. I wasn't even, you know, I didn't even get an email back, basically. But then I applied for Berg's and I got in, and it was the two best years of my life, I think, because it's when you enter this world, regardless of what school you go into, when you actually invest in your own mental and creative and professional journey, it was basically 2 years of being completely egotistical. Because I get to focus on my own development 100%. And it led to work and it led to a career that I really, really enjoy. So it was fantastic. And so when I came back to work for Berg's, I was fairly... I've been out in the world, in the real world, a couple of years. And I came back here to kind of lecture. And I could see how when I was forced to put words to my experience... and to explain to other people what it's like to come up with a concept or to develop a strategy or, you know, do all these kind of things, I got better at doing them because I had to put words to them.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice little introduction into our topic about the, you know, the myth or the mistake of the creative genius. One thing that, you know, as Christopher mentioned, we try to set up Bergs as an environment where people are really free to explore what makes them tick and what makes them creative, and to give them lots of support and mentoring into becoming a great creative thinker in lots of different areas. But in this episode, I really want to talk about the myth of the creative genius and how it exists in the world when you walk in the street, hang out with your friends, talk to your family about what you might want to do with your career. Mm. And it's also something that I think it also exists in new students. And there's a little bit of anxiety around what it takes to be a creative and, you know, am I good enough? And a lot of those kinds of questions that can really make people anxious and can be really counterproductive in being yourself and being a great creative thinker. So where does the idea of a creative genius come from? Where do you think, Christopher? What's like, how do we kind of grow up with the world telling us that some people are creative and some people aren't, and some people are geniuses and the rest of us are just normal?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, I think it comes from, if we just leave the sort of the world of this school and our business for a second and look at sort of society as a whole, I think the way that we've been taught history is a big problem, because we've all heard that expression "Eureka," when something just appears in your mind and all of a sudden you invented the wheel, or you're Einstein and you've managed to crack the speed of light and all of that. But what people don't tell in those stories is all the other people helping and supporting that kind of mindset and challenging each other. So, for example, if you look at Apple, everyone talks about the creative genius in Steve Jobs. They don't talk about the tenth of thousands of people working at Apple helping to create that idea and helping to kind of spar that thought into something that is absolutely genius. And so I think we have this because we want to simplify things. It's much easier to say that, wow, she's a creative genius because she came up with this campaign. Did she really do it alone? Probably not.
Yeah, exactly. And like on that Apple point, I mean, as soon as you learn that the background in the Mona Lisa painting by Da Vinci was painted by a studio of other people, you start to realize that, you know, history likes to streamline and abbreviate things to single creative geniuses, but there's movements or teams of people that never get written into the history books. So you grow up thinking that Da Vinci, Einstein, Mozart are just singular people, you know, that worked on their own, on their lonesome. It's that there's this kind of lone wolf genius concept that you're taught a little bit in school.
And also, like, you know, Andy Warhol, for example, he had a place called The Factory, which was just so many people working on his things. He became the spokesperson of those different sort of work, like the different things that was put out in to the world. But he didn't necessarily create them. But we give him credit for everything that all these other people did.
Yeah, I mean, the Factory is a great example. It was a springboard for a whole bunch of... It was a whole artistic and creative movement. I mean, the Velvet... I keep wanting to say Velvet Revolver, but... which is a bad metal band. But the Velvet Underground came out of that scene. And so what happens is you see that there's creative hotspots and there's a community that builds fairly organically and it becomes really creative. I think another place where we get this bad idea of a creative genius stuck in our head is, like, you know, at school as a kid, you are often assessed on art and your teacher tells you if something's good or not. Mm. And so all of a sudden, like... like, you know, great creativity and great eureka moments don't just happen. There's a whole lot of failed experiments and, you know, trials and all of these things that go to building up to that eureka moment. And so you need to be okay with the idea that you will succeed eventually, but great things don't just happen if you want them to happen.
No, and also I think, I mean, the way we judge creativity is also contextual. So what do we premiere in a certain space and time? Because it's really not unheard of that a same unique, in quotation marks, idea has been presented at the same time in two different places of the world. I mean, we see that when it comes to religion, to shamanism, to like the way we have evolved as a race. Because I studied social anthropology before I started here at Berks. And the interesting thing is you can see in different tribes around the world how the same patterns and the same rituals emerged at the same time, but they had no contact with each other. And so a creative, like a stroke of creative genius today, that we, the way we identify it, might not be that, might not have been so celebrated 20 years ago, because it's not relevant 20 years ago. It's relevant now.
I think one of the questions you need to ask yourself is a small question with a big answer, and that is like, what is creativity? And it's, you know, there's books and podcasts and documentaries made about this stuff, but...
So let's make another one.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Christopher, what would your definition of creativity be?
I think it's in the word. It's to create something. And so if you can tie your shoelaces in a different way, then you're creative. If you can cook, you're creative. So it's basically creating stuff. But what we add to that, the sort of the unsaid sentence is create stuff that is unique, create stuff that moves you. And that's when it comes into sort of the realm of it has that X factor, it has that extra value, added value. But to be creative is just to be able to create something. It could be a drawing, it could be cooking, it could be inventing a new slang word, it could be whatever, just create something. That's creativity. And that's the reason why we need to kill the myth of the creative genius, because when we talk about the creative genius, we give them exclusive rights on being creative. And that's the danger, because it's harmful for people, it's harmful for businesses, it's harmful for our industry. It's just not good.
Yeah, I mean, one advantage in working in the communications industry for a while is you need to explain what the hell you do to lots of people that may or may not have much of a background in those areas. And the way that I always describe it to my mom and my family and, you know, my mates that work in really different places is like, a good definition of creativity is like a new combination of old and new things that solves a problem that you have. So I think like it's really, you know, you can combine lots of different things and end up with randomness, but not all randomness will help you make a great meal or, you know, bring a smile to your face on an Instagram story or something like that. So I think it's like it's this weird combination of like a novel, unique combination of stuff that is useful to solve a problem. And there's lots of problems that people have. The problems don't always turn up in the obvious places. So like it's very predictable to expect creativity in, you know, the smash hit pop single in summer, or if you're trying to, you know, record that song. But it's like, I think creativity can be everything from like making a really nice meal with the stuff that's in your refrigerator.
Yeah. Yeah.
To like organizing a really good birthday for a friend or a partner.
Your answer was much better than mine.
Well, I'm just...
But because I think you're to that point is a very valid point. Creativity only gets a certain amount of value if it actually solves a problem or enhances something. Creativity for creativity's sake is just a fairy tale, which is nice, but it doesn't necessarily change anything. But when creativity can be used as a tool to either solve a problem or to gain a greater insight or to make people laugh or, you know, move people's emotions, that's when it becomes super powerful.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing that holds up the idea of the creative genius is the fact that we only see the finished version of great pieces of creative. So Noma is an amazing restaurant in Christopher's hometown of Copenhagen. And they, I'm sure, there's a whole lot of food experiments that are inedible and kind of hit the bin. But it's the ones that turn up on Instagram are the ones that are the 1% victories that get refined over time.
Absolutely. And also creativity is often as a response to a certain problem. I mean, this year, for example, the year of COVID has been a fantastic year for creativity because we had to. We had to do things in a new way. We had to change the way we've always, you know, conducted ourselves. And NoMa is a really great example because in Copenhagen, the rules were really harsh on sort of, you know, social gatherings and stuff like that. And for restaurants and hotels, that was basically the end. But NoMa, they decided to do takeaway instead, which is kind of fun for a 3 Michelin star restaurant who's been named the best restaurant in the world. And the takeaway wasn't sort of the, you know, fine dining. They did burgers, basically. But they did vegetarian burgers with like moldy quinoa. And I was like, who would ever eat that? And the thing is, I drove past once because we were going out to the beach. And the line was 400 meters long.
You need to assume that you can change the world either for yourself and that fate doesn't really exist, that you can make new things that affect the world and can make it better in some way. Mm. I think you need like, so that goes down to a lot of core beliefs and attitudes, but like, I think until you've got that core belief that you can control your destiny, you can control the environment around you. Maybe if you're an architect, you can change the way people hang out in a city. And I think COVID was a really good slap in the face and a wake-up call because all of a sudden the world changed. So all of a sudden, you know, if you had a 9-to-5 job and you worked in finance and you turned up and you had coffee with Carol and Michael and David every morning, all of a sudden those routines were broken and all of a sudden you know, the world stopped being predictable and it kind of required creative, unpredictable responses to that or new responses.
It's been very uncomfortable for a lot of people. And I think that's actually something that creativity also, one of the ingredients in creativity is uncomfort. Because you embark on something that you have no idea where you're going to land and you try new things. So there is no right answer. And so whenever you're in that space, it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And it's one that I try and make in class a little bit. And that is like, if you see yourself as creative, that's a great start. And another really important ingredient into that is to understanding that you will suck a lot. You will like...
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
And you've got to be very okay with the idea that your ideas are dumb or silly or weird or stupid. And you also need to accept the fact that you're not your ideas. So you can have a dumb idea and still be a great person and a great partner and a really good, you know, citizen. Living with that uncomfort is... I mean, it's uncomfortable and weird, and it takes a long time to get used to. So, like, if we go back to school, you know, there's a really common idea that kids are really creative. And then when you get to a certain age, you get self-conscious and you look like a bit of a dork. And so the beautiful people that are around you don't kind of find you attractive if you experiment and make mistakes. So you tend to pull back and you pull your punches and you stop expressing your creativity compared to what you might have done when you're a small kid.
Absolutely. I mean, assimilation and the need and want to be like everyone else is another big sort of hindrance for creativity. But to that point, you're not your ideas. I think that is the most, that's really at the core of it. Because if you've tried to do something creative and you tried to come up with a new solution to a problem and it didn't work out and you felt like a fool, then if you base your own self-worth on that, then obviously you're not going to say you're a creative person. Because if you would, then you wouldn't have made those mistakes. But that's the thing, you would have. So, I mean, I don't know how many times I've been faced with a brief or, you know, a challenge that I was supposed to create, solve creatively that just went super bad. If I would have judged myself on that, I would not have been staying in this industry.
It really sucks. And I think once you realize that other people feel that too, I think that gets a little bit easier to accept. So, I mean, you know, if we can... Another way of killing the myth of the creative genius is to kind of, you know, let the people around you have good and bad ideas and just try and build on them and help them out and just be a little bit a little bit loving and a little bit supportive and just try to, you know, help them get to a better place.
I think that's a good way of saying it. Creativity is what it's like. I don't think I've ever been in a conversation where I use the word creativity that much, this much.
No, it's like using the word innovation. As soon as say it, you've maybe lost the game.
Yeah. To understand that what you put out, your execution of an idea, whether it be a campaign or a dish or, you know, a painting or whatever, is just, that's just a result of different choices. So you're, the same sort of insight, the same thing that you see in your head can be executed in a million different ways. And the thing that makes it good or bad is not necessarily the insight you have. So you might have had that eureka moment. It's just, how do you bring that to life? How do you give that a body? How do you make that a thing? And so the things that you should judge yourself on and others is just the choices, not necessarily the capacity of being creative, but the choices. Because, I remember standing in the classroom when I was teaching, and people, because normally here at Berks, we have like a presentation every week. And so I remember for myself, when I was teaching and also when I was a student, I remember standing there presenting something on that Friday, and it was really, really shit. And people were like, I don't understand your idea. This doesn't make sense. Like, the execution is off. Everything is just not, it just doesn't work. And I felt super bad. And then the week after, I presented something that was just amazing, in my own opinion. Thank you very much. But also, it was received very, very well. But I'm the same person. It was just different choices from week one to week two. And so when you get that, it's not as dangerous or it's not as scary to put out the things that you want to do into the world and be judged. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I really agree. And it brings up a point that I had jotted down on a piece of paper here. And that is like, and this comes a little bit with experience and with confidence, but if you can keep in your head the fact that you've solved problems and made things okay in the past. I mean, maybe cooking is a good example because lots of people do it. When you start cooking, you're pretty unpredictably good or bad and you're really unorganized and it feels like chaos and you make a lot of things that are probably, you know, hopefully you've got polite people around you that say it tastes okay and they empty their plate and all that kind of stuff. But after a while, you develop little techniques and go-to things that you know that reliably work. And so you can lean on those a little bit and use that as a bit of a base for other experimentation. You need to be kind enough to yourself to be gritty, to know that like, yeah, maybe I suck on Monday, but maybe on Wednesday I can be a little bit better, and maybe on Friday I can be pretty good.
Yeah, and to that metaphor, I mean, cooking, the people who are best at that are professional chefs, and they spend hours, like thousands of hours, refining that craft. And it's the same thing with anything creative. You have to work on it. And I think the dangers of talking about a creative genius, it kind of takes away that factor.
It's like looking at, you know, food porn on Instagram and wondering why you can't do that. And it's like, well, there's 827 photos in that person's camera roll of failed experiments and, you know, stuff all over the kitchen that you don't get to see. So, I mean, that's more the reality. Like, sucking at something is more the reality or more of the time than the final beautiful finished cake, painting, artwork or whatever.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, this makes me think of, there's a Netflix series called Nailed It. Have you seen it?
No, it's on my watch list.
It's really fun. And it's big. It's like, so it's like a cooking show where people who do not know how to bake or cook anything are challenged with creating something that a master has done. So it can be like a wedding cake that looks just absolutely amazing. And they basically say, so you have an hour, recreate this cake. And it looks like shit. But it's so fun because it actually puts the finger on what it is. If they would have been given 1,000 hours to create that cake, it would look the same because they had to work on it.
Totally.
But to think that you can just jump in and just be a creative, fantastic genius or whatever we want to call it, is just simply wrong.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You need to give yourself time and space because when you're new at something, it can take a little or a long time to get really good at at it. I think in the next episode, we'll talk about why constraints are really useful, because I think that's really important to frame things. But before we get there, I've got one question for you. Mm-hmm. Have you ever worked or seen a creative genius alive today in the real world? Do you know any creative geniuses?
I mean, it'd be bad if I said yes now, right?
No, it's just like I'm just very curious because, you know, we've both done lots of stuff around, you know, communications and creativity. I was just wondering if you've worked with any people that might be written into the history books or written into something as a creative genius.
I mean, I have worked with people who have created amazing things. There's this guy that I worked with in Australia who is dyslexic, but also the best copywriter I've ever met. So he obviously, worked with ideas that were huge and really changed the world. And so from an outside perspective, I was like, he is a creative genius. But I understood what he was good at. And what he was good at was to create teams of people with different, from different disciplines and managing those teams. So that was his strength. And with that sort of strength, he could change the world. He could help Barack Obama be elected president. He could help UNICEF raise $1 million in a week. He created such phenomenal change in the world, but it wasn't because he had all the answers. It's because he knew exactly what he was doing when he put his team together. And then I worked with other people who are fantastic storytellers, and they can craft... just with a piece of paper and a pen, they can make a whole generation cry. I mean, they're phenomenal with that. But that's what they do. They don't necessarily know how to produce it so that everyone knows about it and to get, you know, make it scalable and all that. So they all needed people kind of get to that end result that I thought and I credited that single person for before I actually got to know them.
It's interesting you mentioned the Obama campaign. So if I'm remembering this correctly, the campaign line was hope.
Yeah.
If it was hope, I think that's a really interesting thing because it's like there is that confidence to be super simple. And I think like sometimes when you're distilling down answers, it can take a lot of confidence and some experience not to add extra stuff to make it look smarter or funnier or, you know, cleverer than it needs to be. So it's like that confidence to be simple is a great place where that confidence comes out.
100%. Yes, make it simple because that's when... But that's the hardest thing though, isn't it? To make things simple. We always want to make them complicated because we have this urge of trying to show the world how smart we are.
No, it's even more than that. I think it's just the fact that lots of good ideas are messy in your mind. So it's hard to get rid of the hangover of the idea and just draw a straight line or the right path. I don't think I've ever worked with a creative genius, if I think about it. I've worked with a whole bunch of really talented, hardworking people. But they were just talented and really hardworking.
Yeah.
And they were happier to have more bad ideas. And then they were smart enough to pick out the start of good ideas.
Mm.
I wish I could give an insight for every 15-year-old, 11-year-old, 20-year-old. You know, I wish I could show that stuff. Because I think it's just like, you know, there's a work ethic and an okayness with sucking and a confidence that you will kind of get there in the end. I think that's the only thing these people have in common. In my experience, maybe you're luckier than me.
No, but like I said, he wasn't a creative genius. He was just good at one thing that led to creative sort of an output that was genius. But it wasn't just him. It was everyone else working on it. So I agree. I haven't never met anyone who can do everything by themselves. I don't think ever.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe music's a good example of that. Like you hear Mariah Carey, Lady Gaga, the Beatles or whatever, and you're like, okay, they're 1, 2, 3, 4 people recording. And you're like, well, no, they're a team of producers, a really good manager, like a good business partner. There's a whole bunch of people that don't make sound on the recording that contribute to that community that produces great stuff.
100%. It gives me hope. I mean, really, because if there was such a thing as a creative genius, I would have to quit my day job.
Yeah, I'd be out before the end of the day. Yes.
Right?
I think people might have creative genius moments, but there a few minutes every year, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, and I think to your point before, like, hard work, that is the key. You have to work and do it again and do it again and do it again. That's the only way you're going to achieve any kind of success, whether it be like career-wise or like, you know, personally or whatever, because it is a lot of hard work. And I think we have this assumption that things that we really want are going to come to us easily. I mean, another example of that, I'm not sure if this is going to make sense, but, you know, growing up watching, you know, Disney movies, you think that relationships are going to be easy. Just one day, as soon as you meet that one person, everything is just, they live happily ever after. That's not true. If for anyone who's been in a relationship knows that you need to put in the work to make it work.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. Before we wrap up, do you think there's any other personality traits or things that creative people or people that see themselves as creative have in common?
Curiousness, I think. I think that's the one thing that, because if you're curious, you're going to look at the world from a different lens, and then you're going to see things that no one else has seen.
Yeah, I'm so happy you said that. That was exactly the point that I was going to make.
I am.
So what do you think it is about curiosity that fuels creative thinking in lots of ways?
I think it's just that. I mean, if you're curious, then you want to see different things. I mean, for example, this is a very hands-on sort of experiment that you can try. So I don't know where you are listening to this, if you're out walking or home in your sofa or whatever. If you're at home, lie down on the floor on your stomach and look at your apartment or your house from that perspective. You're going to see a completely different world. I realized this now when I got a dog, like everyone else did during COVID. I found myself on the floor a lot because I was playing with my dog. And I was like, oh, my apartment looks completely different from this angle. And that's just a very basic way of doing things. If you travel to a new city when the restrictions are lifted and you're walking around in a new city, don't look down on your phone. Look up. Look at the buildings around you. And you will see a completely different version of that city than you would if you just sat on a bus looking at everything else that everyone else looks at. And I think curiousness just opens up a completely new perspective. And when that happens, you see new things. And with those new ideas and those new things, you get different thoughts. That's just the train of, you know, events. With new perspective comes new insights, 100%.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, the great thing about curiosity is it lets you fill your mind up with information and knowledge and stuff that doesn't seem really related. Like, you know, if you start researching 19th century bicycles or, I don't know, teaspoons from some weird culture or whatever it is, you'll be amazed at how useful that can be as something to just have in the back of your mind and just to walk around with. Because the things that you see, the shapes, the artwork, the colors, the relationships to culture and people, it comes out. So,
but I also think that to that point, Adam, I think when you see things in a new light or you see new things and you don't actually know all the history and all the information, you have to fill in the blanks to make sense of it. And then you use your imagination. And that's when the creativity kind of sparks, because you need to make sense of it. And so you create your own version of why the way things are.
Yeah, exactly. The other great thing about curiosity is it makes you challenge the normal convention of something. So you kind of ask yourself, what if we did this in a different way? Like, what if we changed the process for doing paperwork, you know, in my workplace? What if we had to get to work, school, volleyball, a friend's house without using a bus or a scooter? Like, you start to challenge, that curiosity challenges you to frame a problem in a different and unique way. And that can be super powerful.
Yeah. And I think that question, what if, is the key question here.
Well, it's the name of our podcast for a good reason. It's like,
what a segue.
It's amazing how often that comes up in either brainstorming or idea generation or in classrooms. Like, what if we did this? Mm. What if we took this technology and did this? What if we looked at it this way? I mean, it's a really positive and useful phrase and concept.
Yeah, because it opens up the world to exploration. And when you explore things, things are not always going to go the way you intended. And that's the serendipitous effect of that is what can create creative highlights, 100%.
I can't help but agree. If you have this this idea of a creative genius stuck in your head, try to be kind enough to yourself to dislodge that concept so that you're freed up enough to start having a whole bunch of bad ideas so you can have a whole bunch of good ideas. And also don't think that creativity is something that only turns up in a Spotify playlist or on the walls of an art gallery. It's like it's in lots of places, big and small. I think the small places can be often the most beautiful. I promise you, your life will be slightly nicer and more interesting and less anxious if you can start to be kind enough to see yourself as a creative genius, as much as it might exist from moment to moment, and a person that has good and bad ideas and just wants to get to a slightly better place.
Beautiful.
Thank you for joining What If, a podcast about creativity in a nutshell. In the next episode, we'll talk about why constraints can be a really useful thing for creative thinking.
See you then.